Did you know that Gymboree Play & Music offers live online classes? Come play the virtual way. We now offer online playtime classes, and you can register for your first class for free online at gymboreeclasses.com.
You're listening to The Parent Pod Podcast by Gymboree Play & Music. The Parent Pod is a weekly conversation about early childhood development topics for parents with children ages 0 to 5. While the content of this show is meant to be informative, it is not meant to replace the guidance of your physician, therapist, or pediatrician. Today, we're chatting with Rachel Costello about Yo Re Mi and the benefits of yoga for kids. Rachel is a Yoga Alliance certified teacher specializing in vinyasa, prenatal, postpartum, yoga nidra, trauma-informed yoga, and yoga for children and families. Through Yo Re Mi, Rachel works with schools and educators in New York. She's an artist, a singer, and a performer, and loves to incorporate dance theater into her classes. She's been teaching both adults and children since 2005, and as a mother of two, especially loves sharing the benefits of yoga and mindfulness with women, children, and families. Thank you for listening to this episode, and we hope you enjoy the show. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Parent Pod Podcast by Gymboree Play & Music. I am excited today to be speaking with Rachel Costello, who happens to be the founder of a wonderful company up in New York, although I want to say they're available online, and they also have an app. They do have some classes up in New York, but before I get into all of that in this particular episode, I wanted to welcome Rachel to the show.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
Okay. So I know that we're going to talk all about your company, but before we get to that, I'd like you to kind of tell our guests a little bit about yourself, how you came to become the creator of this company and this fabulous app.
Thank you. Yeah. So my name is Rachel and I'm a mom. I have a six-year-old and a three-year-old at home. And before I was a mom, I was also a musician, and I've been teaching yoga for adults and children for now about, 15 years. Mm-hmm. So I was working my husband was working at a preschool in New York City and teaching music there. I've also been a musician, and they found out that I taught yoga, and they're like, "Ooh, will you have her come in and do some yoga with the kids?" And so we did an after school program, and he was teaching a half an hour of music and I was teaching a half an hour of yoga, and we were both assisting each other in the opposite class. And I was like, "Wow, you're doing a lot of movement with these music classes." And he's like, "Wow, you're doing a lot of music in your yoga classes." And then Yo Re Mi was born. So we were standing on a subway platform and we were looking at each other and we're like, "This should just be one class, put music and yoga together." Mm-hmm. And immediately we were like, it just sparked something. And the school and the parents and the administrators were just like, "Wow, this is amazing." And sometimes it's the most simple things that make the biggest impact, but that was what this was for us.
That's awesome. Can you tell me a little bit about the types of yoga that your company offers and who the programming is really targeted towards? Is it more towards children? Is there something for adults to join in? Yeah. Can it be either or?
So Yo Re Mi, which is the name of our program, is basically we want to help adults, parents, teachers, educators, therapists share the benefits of music and yoga and mindfulness with children. So most of our classes are actually geared toward children. A lot of our content is geared toward children, but we do very, very much encourage adults to participate with their kids because we find it's a wonderful opportunity for parents to connect and not be the person in charge at that moment, for even teachers to connect with the children while someone else is being the teacher. So we find that when parents and adults participate in the kids' yoga classes, they get a lot out of it as well. And the children really enjoy having that parent-child or teacher-child connection.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, to take a step back just a moment, I know that you mentioned just a few seconds ago that you were a musician.
Yes.
And so I'm curious, which instruments did you play? And is some of that experience really incorporated into some of the classes? And if so, how?
Yeah, I've been a musician my whole life. My father in DC, Washington, DC, was a one-man band. He played five instruments at once, all at the same time. And so we constantly had musical people performing artists, creatives coming through our house, collaborating with my dad. So I just kind of grew up in a musical family. Mm-hmm. And then I've always been a vocalist. So that was my primary instrument, was my voice. But in one of my bands, I play keyboard. I grew up playing clarinet in band and in jazz band. Mm-hmm. I also play drums. I play a little bit of guitar. So I just feel like once you learn one instrument, it just opens up this whole world. Mm-hmm. And so I definitely play several instruments. In Yo Re Mi classes, all of the teachers play ukulele. So that was my most recent instrument that I learned, was the ukulele to teach Yo Re Mi. It's easier to do yoga while playing ukulele, not so easy to do playing piano or clarinet.
I believe you. Now, a couple of questions that I would have, particularly as it relates to getting my child involved in yoga. And so I know that some of these may seem silly to some of our listeners, but because this episode is part of our Ask Me Anything series, I'm going to kind of ask you a range of questions. Sure. And feel free to tell me whatever your first impressions are, whatever your personal expertise might be. And so how old should a child be before they are taught yoga? Like, is there a threshold that makes the most sense to introduce yoga to your children?
Yeah. So I just want to start by saying that yoga for preschoolers and for young children will not look like adult yoga. So if you are imagining a row of children quietly sitting on yoga mats, meditating silently, that's not what this looks like. Uh-huh. Children's yoga is very play-based. It is fun. It is fast. It is energetic. And we do have those moments of stillness and of reflection, but we have to meet them where they are. And children have a ton of energy. Mm-hmm. So, as to your question about when to start, children are actually natural yogis. A lot of the poses that we do in yoga are actually things that children do naturally as they're learning to crawl and learning to walk. So you think about like downward facing dog, mm-hmm. how many toddlers, when they're learning to walk, actually push up onto their hands and their feet and walk their feet forward. They do downward facing dog without even knowing that that's a yoga pose. Cobra pose, when you think about when we do tummy time with young children, you know, to start growing those back muscles and the neck muscles, and they have to start lifting their head, that's cobra pose. So babies do yoga. Young children do yoga naturally. So there really isn't like, you know, you don't have to wait till they are verbal to start doing yoga. Children do yoga naturally. I will say in the class setting, typically our classes, mm-hmm. we like to have like strong walkers and up. So we usually say, you know, once you can stand and walk around, you're going to get the most out of the class. But we've had classes, you can do baby yoga. It's a lot of tummy time. But yeah, there's not really a starting age. And then, of course, as soon as you start to have those skills, both the physical skills and the mindfulness skills, they really grow on each other. And so children can practice throughout their whole lives.
Now, another question I would have would be, how is it that, I'm trying to figure out the best way to phrase this, but how is it that parents can really teach their children the concept of mindfulness? Mm-hmm. Does it look the same for children when you are teaching it to them as adults would probably be taught if they were to start trying to practice mindfulness or meditation in their 20s?
Sure. Yeah, it doesn't actually look tremendously the same, but there are some similarities. I will say that the best way for an adult to share mindfulness with their children is to have a practice themselves. Children really learn from how we model behavior. So if a child notices, like, when you have a strong emotion or when something's happening, if a child notices their adult taking a deep breath, counting to five, taking a moment to balance and steady themselves and center before reacting. Those are all mindfulness practices that we can teach simply by practicing them ourselves. Mm-hmm. In terms of like mindfulness meditation, children actually are very present. So this is actually something that we kind of lose as we get older and then maybe regain through some of these mindfulness practices. But when you are with a child, they're very much in the moment, present in the moment. So really meeting them there and valuing that in them, noticing things with them, observing the world around, taking the time to stop and listen to the sounds of the birds, stop and notice the flower. These are all mindfulness practices, noticing the way that your foot feels as you take a step. And these are things that children love to do. So I think the two things are definitely have a mindfulness practice for the adult, and then just kind of meet the children at their speed, make it playful and fun, and then find ways to develop those skills they already innately have. So children are so mindful. Can we actually support them to keep those skills as they grow older and interact more with society?
Mm-hmm. Now, just to switch gears a little bit, I know that... And I've seen many articles about this online, and I'm just curious about your perspective, is the concept of using yoga in place of disciplinary action. So for example, if a child shows behavior that may suggest that the child is angry or may be having behavioral problems, either with caregivers or teacher, mom, dad, whatnot, using yoga as a way to help discipline the child and help them to get recentered. Does your particular program address this? And do you have any perspective on whether the use of yoga to counteract or counterbalance anger in young children or behavioral issues is in fact a good idea?
That's a really good question. I have to think about that one. So I think that first, kind of this goes to what we were just saying. When we see that a child is, as they say, acting out or having behavioral quote unquote issues, we have to look for what are the feelings under the freak out, you know, like, can we hold space for this child? Can we help them name those emotions? We practice something called fact-based observations, which is basically, can we state what is using fact-based observations? The sky is blue is a fact-based observation. I see you're upset. I see you're crying. Can you tell me how you're feeling? Saying things like that, giving space for a child to have their emotions, to name their emotions, to have an experience of those feelings can sometimes help. And then by modeling that, that kind of, you know, holding space, validation, empathy, compassion, these are all behaviors and qualities we cultivate through the practice of yoga. By holding that space for that child, we can hold the space for them to maybe find those things for themselves as well. Mm-hmm. I don't love to say yoga as a form of discipline. It's a form of support. It is a support because I really believe that children are innately, they want to be well, they want to be healthy, they want to be regulated. And some children need more support than others. And we all have different things going on. So if we can show that compassion and empathy and hold that space, we can also teach them how to hold that space for themselves, which will empower them in the future to be able to deal with whatever comes their way.
I love your response to that. You know, I find that it's interesting the many uses of things like yoga, mindfulness, and how they come about, particularly in, and I've looked at several parenting forums about how families are leveraging these, I hate to say tools, as a means to help their children with behavior. And so I'd always wondered, you know, from the perspective of like a teacher, you know, if that would inherently change the routine of teaching the child to go through the poses or teaching them about the tenets of what meditation and what mindfulness actually is.
Yeah.
And so I think your input is just incredibly helpful in terms of families trying to figure out if that is something that they would want to use for their own children. Cause I know it's certainly a question that I've seen come up in many a parenting forum. And usually there's never, you know, a black and white answer. It usually just gets discussed until we jump to another thread until people are like, okay. There's no strong answer here. Just, you know, move on. But I've always just been curious about that.
Yeah. I mean, these tools are wonderful for self-regulation. Absolutely. And I think there are really great tools because, you know, children are feeling many of the same emotions and feelings and disappointments and sadness and loss and all of these things that we feel, they're feeling them too. They just don't have the capacity to self-regulate in the way that we do as adults. And even us as adults, a lot of us were taught to stuff those things down and not really allow those emotions to live and breathe. Mm-hmm. So I think what yoga and the practice of mindfulness enables us to do is hold space for all of those feelings, name those feelings and use tools. You know, once we've named them and we can acknowledge that, you know, they're not good or bad, you know, giving ourselves lots of compassion, self-compassion, then we can start to think about, okay, well, what is that feeling feel like in my body? Is there something that I could do that would be different to help with that? You know, and that's when we start to tell, you know, teach children like, okay, when you're feeling that angry feeling, and for every child, we say, you know, what does angry feel like in your body? And for some children, it feels, they feel angry in their belly. And for some children, they feel angry in their chest. And so depending on where they feel that emotion, we might say, okay, like, how can we move in a way that helps, you know, move that anger through? It's okay. It's just a feeling. All feelings are valid. All feelings are okay. A feeling is a sign. It's a signal. But then if we don't want to stay in that angry place, or if we want to move it through our body, what are the tools we can use? What are the deep breathing techniques that could maybe help us to self-regulate in those moments? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, another question that I've seen pop up on many a parenting forum is this idea that yoga is technically a spiritual or religious practice and therefore shouldn't really be, children shouldn't be exposed to it unless that is a religion or a spiritual belief their family holds. I'm curious to hear your perspective on whether or not yoga is in fact situated around a spiritual belief system, or is yoga something that anybody can essentially tap into and do and it not have anything to do with one's beliefs?
Yeah. So I would say, first of all, our program, YoRaimi, we keep it completely secular because we are working in schools and it's so important that this program be inclusive for everyone. Mm-hmm. And so we actually do not utilize any Sanskrit in our program. We don't do chanting or mantra, some of those things, not necessarily because they are religious, but because it might make someone feel like they're not included. And so we really feel like in the spirit of community and inclusiveness to make it welcoming for all children and all families, it's really an important thing. I will say that yoga, while the practice of yoga is not specifically religious, it is spiritual. Mm-hmm. And there's a difference. So a lot of the religious aspects, I would say, is because yoga came up at the same time as Hinduism, and it is traditionally, and I would not say I'm an expert around Hinduism and that religion, so I don't want to say too much about that. I just know my personal practices, but it came up at the same time, and yoga in some ways supported that spiritual practice, that religious practice, and vice versa, that religious practice, spiritual practice supported the practice of yoga. So they were very much intertwined. And then of course, with mindfulness, you have the history through Buddhism, a lot of mindfulness practices have their foundations in Zen and Zen Buddhist practices. So that all being said, I do believe there is a way that you can take these tools and these avenues for self-development and make them not part of a religion per se. And in fact, you can use yoga to strengthen your personal beliefs. So whatever your religious belief might be, if you can actually practice yoga in support of that religious belief. So I know a lot of my friends who are Christians who practice yoga, a lot of my friends who are atheists who practice yoga, agnostics who practice yoga. So it can really be for your own practice. It is very much like that. Yes. Yeah.
No, that's awesome. I love the way that you've been able to position this. And again, some of these are questions that I've seen come up, and there's no right or wrong answer. But I do think, you know, in an Ask Me Anything series, it's good for families to have input from different business owners, in your case, different yogis, on how to best position this for themselves and for their families. You know, there's a lot of misconceptions, I think, floating around as it pertains to, I hate to say yoga and mindfulness, not that it's new at all, but I feel like the concept of teaching the art of yoga and mindfulness to young children has something that's really come about really in the last 5 to 6 years, more so than the past. And so for some parents, the decision to pursue something like yoga with their family requires them to look through some of their own beliefs around what they think it is, what they've heard that it is, and trying to figure out how to navigate bringing it into their children's lives if in fact it's a good fit for them.
Absolutely. And I really encourage parents to do the due diligence, because I will say that while our program is completely secular, there are kids yoga programs, there are yoga programs that are not. So, if that is a concern for a parent, I would definitely, before joining any kids yoga program, just, you know, find out what their structure is and, you know, call and ask those questions, because I think that's very valid. The practice of yoga needs to support your life, not the other way around. So whatever the belief system is in your family, whatever the rituals or the traditions of your family, then yoga and that education should support that.
I have just a few more questions. I know we're going to be coming up to the end of the episode, maybe in the next 5 to 6 minutes here, but I'm going to try to get through them.
Okay. I'll try and give you short answers.
So now, if somebody were to sign up for your app, what are three things that they absolutely like must do, must try the minute they get the app downloaded onto their phone?
Yes. Okay. So for parents, we have a welcome series. It's a welcome video series, and I would definitely like just watch it. They're like 30 seconds each, three videos. You can watch them in a couple minutes, but it just tells the parents a little bit about how to navigate the app and some of the cool features. So I definitely say parents, watch the welcome videos, because then you can help your kid know where to find all the cool stuff in the app. For the kids, I would say check out our full length adventures. And so we have lots of adventures: outer space, dinosaurs, gardening, beach, snow, whatever your child's interest is, go ahead and get them into one of those long adventures. They're about 20 minutes a piece. So it's a great time. It's quality screen time. If you, mom, dad, teacher, need to do something, you can either do the adventure with your kid. A lot of the kids do the adventures on their own because they're super engaging and fun. But yeah, find something that really aligns with their interests and try that out first. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, with the app, is it just a mobile app or is it also a web app?
It's on the web. It's on iOS and Android. And then also if you have teachers, you can use it on a smart board or an interactive whiteboard.
Yeah. Okay. Is there the ability to, and I know with certain apps on my phone, so for example, with YouTube, I'm able to share the video to appear on our television screen. Does the app have the ability to do that as well?
Absolutely. Yeah. You can, what is it called? Screencasting? Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, I know there's a fancier way of saying it, but I'm like, oh, look for the share button, you know, and my toddler who's three, he knows how to do everything, but honestly, he knows how to do it a little bit better than I do sometimes. So I'm like, yeah, okay. Yeah. You're set up. You already know it. He knows exactly what he wants to do and he can put it on the screen in no time. So
I know my 6-year-old was making a Spotify playlist the other day. I was like, I didn't even know you knew how to do that.
Oh my goodness. No, I just think it's interesting with technology, like how much more open the world is, but the fact that children get to explore that world earlier in life, I think it's great. But, you know, to myself, sometimes I'm like, wow, you know, your world is so much bigger at a younger age and you know, how much information is too much versus how much is the appropriate amount, given that they're going to be essentially competing with their peers who are all growing up with the same level of exposure to technology. And so,
It's a common question, I think, is like, how much is too much around technology?
Yeah.
Well, there's so many varying opinions around that. Yeah.
I know. And so I'm like, oh, you know, do I limit the screen time? And then that's something that I'm being recommended to do as a parent versus do I let him navigate on his own? Because eventually he's going to go to school and he's going to be around other kids who've all grown up with the same technology and access to tech in their homes. And so if I limit this now, is there going to be an impact when he's in school if other kids have consumed more information than he did?
Yeah.
So I know it's going to be like the age old question of our generation because we weren't raised with a lot of
We were not, yeah, exactly. We weren't raised with this amount of technology. And I think that everything in moderation is always my motto. Is so like, yes, screen time is cool. Tech is cool. Like it's a whole other language, computer language and coding and all these cool things that children, like I never learned to code in third grade. Like, it's like what? All of these things that are available to our children are amazing. And we have to make sure that they're still having enough time to like move their bodies, get outside, get fresh air, all those things. So I think that it's all about having some balance, but yeah.
Now, I know that I've got a couple of questions left for you. Have you seen any marked improvement from or gotten any testimonials even from families that have used your app and your program to help teach their child about mindfulness and then even to introduce yoga to their families? Have you seen any marked improvement? Have you gotten any feedback from parents who are like, yes, this has absolutely transformed the way my child does X, Y, Z?
We get positive feedback all the time. I would say, I can tell you one story that just kind of illustrates the power of combining music and yoga together. This was a few years ago, but we had a child in one of our classes, in an in-person class. His name was Dennis. And he was being raised in a bilingual house. So he was pretty nonverbal at age 3. Mm-hmm. And so he was not very verbal at home and he was not very verbal in the classroom. And we were giving our program as part of the education at a pretty progressive play-based school. Mm-hmm. And so their philosophy, which is also our philosophy, is a child will learn at their own pace, create space, create openings for that child, you know, and allow them to come to the learning at their own pace. So Dennis sat in Yoremi classes for 6 weeks. And, you know, we have our mats in a circle, everybody's up and dancing and singing. He was not disruptive at all. He just sat and watched. He didn't, you know, disrupt the class, but he wasn't doing any of the things. And then one day, Dennis stood up and participated. He knew all the words to all the songs. He knew all the movements. He sang through the entire class. And the feedback from his home, from his parents and from his teachers is that suddenly he was becoming more verbal both at home and in the classroom. And I think that when we give children the opportunity and we empower children to have these experiences, then the learning comes. And I just remember the day he stood up and did the whole class. I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. And, you know, that family was a Yoremi family for life, for sure. And we get feedback like that all the time. Improved fine and gross motor skills, improved social emotional behavior. I get a lot of feedback from with parents who have children with special needs. That a lot of the activities that we're doing are very similar to the physical activities they're doing as part of their physical therapy or occupational therapies, but the children are having so much fun, they don't even think it's work. So, they love it. And the parents know, wow, this is really benefiting my child. And I don't have to fight with them to do their exercises. They actually want to do their exercises because it's part of this fun adventure. And we're singing and we're playing instruments and we're being silly and we're being playful. And there's some animations and all of those things. So a lot of the feedback we've gotten about the Yoremi app is that a lot of parents that have children with special needs are using the app a lot to supplement, even right now in 2020, especially to supplement some of the therapies that were not as accessible when things were shut down.
Now, this has been such an enlightening conversation, and I'm excited that I had the opportunity to chat with you today. My final question will be, how can families reach out to you? How can they find you on social media if they have more questions or want to learn more about your app and what it can offer their family?
Great. So you can visit us at yoremikids.com. That's yoremikids.com. And you can see the app is there, or you can just search for it on Apple Store or Google Store at Yoremi. And you can find us on Instagram and Facebook. And if you sign up for our newsletter, we send out a monthly newsletter for parents and for teachers with tips on how to incorporate music and yoga and mindfulness at home and in the classroom. And the biggest thing is just to get started, because once you start, you'll never want to stop, because you'll notice the changes in your children. You'll notice the changes in the classroom. So reach out to us anytime. And I will also mention that we're collaborating with New York City Children's Theater. We produced a full-length children's theater experience called The Forest of Feelings. So some of that that we were talking about before, about naming feelings and feelings being, you know, okay, and emotions, we actually created a theater production which incorporates yoga and music, and it's an interactive Zoom theater show. So it's happening. This is the last month of the show. So if you want to visit us at New York City Children's Theater, come to a show. I'd love to meet you.
Awesome. Well, thank you again for your time today. And for our listeners at home, we want to hear from you what you thought about some of the topics that we discussed in this episode. Feel free to mention or tag either one of us. Use the Parent Pod podcast hashtag on social media so we can jump in and answer any questions or get more insight on this really amazing topic when it comes to children and yoga, mindfulness, how to do it, what are the pros, how to approach it, and what some of the benefits might be long term. So thank you again for listening to this episode. Again, thank you to our wonderful guest, Rachel. And we hope that you'll join us on the next episode of The Parent Pod.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Parent Pod. If you enjoyed this conversation, feel free to give us a rating and to share your feedback on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts.